Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. It is a party cast, and we have a hell of a lineup tonight. Let's see. I'm just going to go down the Discord list. Aki's here. Chris is here. Brooke is here. Purnell is here. And Andy Sperry is here. And then, Chris, you brought a friend. Tell us, who's your friend?
Hi, everybody on the internet. This is my friend Justin Olenek, a.k.a. Squarewave, who is going to be joining for a review. He's the drummer for all the bands that I play video game music in.
Oh, really?
Big Super High Tops fan. Pleasure to meet you.
Brooke's really quiet tonight.
I have a Super High Tops t-shirt. That's how big of a fan I am.
Sweet. So do I.
You're a bigger fan than I am. I do not have one.
Wow.
I ordered mine online because they are available there. Because I didn't want to... Well, I don't remember why I didn't just... Radar Supply, but I just bought one online. So technically I am a fan.
I'm wearing an SML shirt. I think I'm one of the only people who bought one of those.
Nice.
I'm wearing it as
well, and I'm wearing it. It has two cats on it.
Nice.
And the shirt says I fed Joe's cats. So
very cool. You did feed
you remembered.
The cats. There's a lot of them too. I'm wearing my 10 years 10 listener shirt. I wore that one at MAGFest, and I had a lot of people who really enjoyed the shirt, and absolutely none of them bought one.
Of course.
Bastard.
That's how it goes.
They don't want to up the count. You'd have to make a new shirt.
I know. Well, we are on 11 years now, so we do have room for one more listener.
Nice.
Applications
Justin,
are now
open. Tell us a bit
open.
About yourself.
Oh, shoot. I don't know. I played the game Felix the Cat before. That is all I've done in my entire life. Maybe I've played the drums. I don't know. I don't know how to describe myself. casual gamer, adulting. I adult every day. Got to do that stuff. I live in Texas. I don't know. I don't even know where everybody lives. It doesn't matter.
Kind of all over the place, really.
Oh, we are all over the place.
We're coast to coast.
Let's see. I'm in Pennsylvania. Who's where?
Washington
California.
State.
Whoa, very nice.
Indiana.
Very cool.
Also like Texas.
It. Brooke, did you change your game? You were like incredibly quiet tonight.
I just turned it up. Let me try to hop off and fix it.
Because I have you maxed on my end and it's still really quiet.
Oof. Okay, let me try to figure this out.
The internet's chanting, more Brooke, more Brooke.
We want Brooke. We want Brooke.
We've had a crazy week. I moved my desktop into another room so I can monitor my pad. Okay, I'm going to figure this out and come back later.
See you in a moment.
I like it.
And she was never heard from again.
Uh-oh. We almost lost Aki.
Okay.
Aki said that there were, what, 9 tornadoes around her today?
Dang. Yeah. Yeah, just, it was crazy.
Just in a row. It was like in a group, a huddle.
It was a parade.
Yeah, basically.
a tornuddle.
A tornado parade. I mean,
because they started at like, I don't know, 5:10 and ended around 6:15. So.
Wow.
Yeah, it was, that was a lot. And that was kind of scary. Not going to lie, that was well past the obscene for this area. So that's more than we usually get in an entire year here. So
yeah, that is nutso. Did anyone else have an exciting weekend? I know we had April Fools. Did anyone get fooled by any fun news?
Yes.
Was there any fun news or was it all bullshit this year?
I only fooled myself because usually I stream like a terrible game on April Fools. That's usually when I play Gilson B. Ponta's games in public. but this year I was just I had stacked way too much on top of myself, so I was not able to go live this year. So I am the fool in that sense.
Timber said they got fooled by a brutal legend remaster. I didn't hear about that.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
That's just rude.
Yeah, it's usually like game studios or just like random people like putting out like the best game that you want, that you really, really want, and then being like, nope. And I'm like, oh, thanks.
I liked IGN. They did the Virtual Boy for Switch. Did you see that one?
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, and I want Virtual Boy for Switch. Someone actually did make Virtual Boy for 3DS, though, if you didn't know.
Really?
Yeah, finally somebody came up with a fully functional stereoscopic 3D Virtual Boy emulator for the 3DS so that you can play your Virtual Boy games exactly in the stereoscopic 3D you were meant to.
Wow.
I don't have any modded 3DSs, so I have not tried it, but sources I trust have confirmed that it is rad.
Man, that is really cool.
Yeah.
I should look into getting an old 3DS and putting weird crap like that on it. Homebrew stuff.
I have one that's modded for streaming, but yeah, it's not software modded. It's just a fully operational 3DS. But yeah, I'm with you. I would do it.
Email that WayForward announces Bimmy and Jammy for River City Girls 2. They're going to put the Double Dragon people, Bimmy and Jammy.
Bimmy and Jimmy is one of my favorite like typos.
I really don't know if it's legitimately going to happen because WayForward has done weird stuff in the past. And at the end, they're like, it's coming out this April. Fools beware. Ha ha ha. But they've done it before and it made it real. So who knows?
Trying to sneakily. Yeah, they did Cat Girl Without Salad Amuse Bouche, which that was an April Fool's joke that became a real thing.
Yeah. I love when April Fool's joke become real thing.
Yeah.
I feel like the Xbox toaster was...
Brooke, you're audible.
Yay.
Hey, did that work?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow, cool. Randomly unplugging my mic and plugging it back in worked, I guess. Sorry, everyone. Did you guys see the Duolingo on Ice thing yesterday?
What's that?
What?
You know Duolingo, the app where you like learn languages, I guess? I don't use it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That is exactly the experience you have with the app. I learn languages, I guess.
What's your streak?
Oh, I don't have one. I'm not on it.
Same. Okay. Well, we came out with an awesome April Fool's yesterday. They like staged a whole musical on Ice, and they like hired dancers and singers, and it was intense. I'll link y'all.
Beautiful.
Sounds wild.
Nice.
I am a frequent Duolingo user, so I'm very curious to see that.
It's wild. It also gets like really dark. They end up saying that they canceled it because the Duolingo bro like harassed a bunch of people. It's crazy. I highly recommend looking that up. And if you're an anime fan, they retweeted their own April Fool's tweet today, and they're like, "Hey, this is the closest to Yuri on Ice movie we're ever gonna get," and that got more likes than their original tweet. Yuri on Ice is an incredible.
Yuri on Ice is fantastic. We need more BL that's like that. It's so good.
It's so good. Everybody who's seen it loves it, and they just don't care if it's BL, and that's how you know it's good. It's a wonderful story of people ice skating their hearts out.
With shows like that, you just push more people into enjoying BL, and I'm so there for that.
Yep. And now that we've made the conversation about boys love and ice skating, how is everybody doing?
How are you guys doing? Love it.
Still good.
Yeah.
Hey, y'all got Aki and I on same show. I love so ice skating.
I was gonna bring up one more good April Fool's joke I saw on Reddit. Some guy got a soap dispenser with red trim, printed out a label that said ketchup, put ketchup in it.
Oh my god.
And then
god.
He put it in a bathroom. Very clearly labeled ketchup, and it's red. And people still use it as soap.
Wow.
I love fun stuff. Like, that's harmless. That is a harmless, fun little thing.
Science is what that is.
And if you paid attention, you wouldn't get got.
I think that's all made up for a very simple reason. A guy made this and put it in a bathroom, which means it went to a men's bathroom, and men regularly do not wash their fucking hands after they've gone bathroom in public bathrooms. They're disgusting. All offense intended to all of you.
Well, I wash my hands because I'm not a filthy,
filthy heathen. Women's bathrooms are absolutely atrocious beyond measure, but, you know. Just,
this isn't about women. This is about men this time. Leave it alone.
Opportunity. Hey, we hate each other. Also, how you doing, everybody? How'd they come up with a good time to show up?
Hey,
for now,
how are you?
I'm doing okay.
I like that Andy just went with it, and I just like, I'll take it. I don't care.
Yeah. That's
really the spirit of the show here.
Well, I know my own life, but I also, you know, as a male bathroom user, I have a front row seat to the behavior that's out there. And so it is definitely a more true statement than not.
I have definitely had moments where I've gone to Target and said I am very glad they added that foot lever to the doors.
Yeah, those are nice.
And like the ones that say, you just put your arm down like a little V shape and pull it open so you don't have to use your hand.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Those
are nice. Like leaving the bathroom, little hook on the door.
That's cool.
So I will say that when I was in a restroom the other day at a restaurant, the guy ahead of me at the sink, there's only one sink, was like taking a long time washing his hands and stuff. And when he turned around and saw me, he apologized. He was like, "Oh, I'm sorry, man. This just my job's got me in the habit of like really washing my hands a lot." And I was like, "Dude, this is the least necessary apology in the history of the world."
Yeah, he deserved a medal, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah,
let me get you a towel.
I appreciate.
I will get you a little
service.
Trophy or something. Yeah, just dude, you are a hero. Now let me wash my hands for like a minute and a half.
I think it just mostly confuses me that people seem to feel like they're in such a rush or their time is so precious that they can forego 20 seconds to wash their hands. And yet by that same token, they are perfectly comfortable wasting tons of time. Well, I'm sure you know the rule, quote unquote, of singing happy birthday while you scrub your hands with soap and water, which accounts to approximately 20 seconds if you say one Wilmington, two Wilmington. So, yes, 20 seconds is the established norm time it takes to wash your hands effectively with good soap. But people
refuse that.
And that's 20 seconds of lathering, not like turn the water on and then start counting.
Exactly. It's while you're lathering. It's 20 seconds of actual lathering. But
interesting.
The things that people will waste their time. I mean, there's no. I mean, I guess you can't overwash your hands. I mean, I guess like a
I like to. Well, I mean, you could like. You could decide to sing the opening track from Yes's "Tales from Topographic Oceans." That's a the revealing science of God. It's about a 20-minute and 23-second song.
I was about to say, if anything, the fact that you would know that song to sing it is awesome enough.
That's a
you
got to
do the instrumental parts too, though, huh?
I said, that's a deep cut of a joke.
That's exactly my kind of joke.
Yeah, it is.
Thimber brought up IHOP doing Sonic pancakes. Did y'all see that?
Sonic pancakes.
I am Googling this now. I had not heard of this.
Yeah, they had Sonic's Blue Blur special pancakes, Tails 2x2x2, which was pancakes, eggs, and bacon. Dr. Eggman Benedict, Knuckles Chicken Sandwich,
that's good.
And Shadows Chaos Chocolate Pancakes.
Did they really not call it a Knuckles Sandwich?
Oh, man.
They probably couldn't.
I'm assuming this is a tie into the Sonic 3 movie, but isn't that kind of early for that?
I think it was just their April Fool's fun.
Sonic is a year-round hedgehog.
Oh, it's April Fool's. Dang it. I'm over here getting my hopes
I think
up.
They really thinking did like, it, though. Like, that it's a legit menu that you can order these items.
I hope so.
Yeah, like, it seems like a reasonable thing to get.
It's on their website and everything. So, speaking of IHOP.
Like pineapples.
Speaking like the chicken of IHOP, Purnell, I believe there's some business you have to attend to tonight, yes?
Yeah, I assume that was partly why you mentioned that. I was like, well, I only just heard of the damn chips, and you're like, oh, for the pancakes. I don't go to IHOP for pancakes. I go to IHOP for potato chips. Thank you.
Damn right.
Yeah, so last week on the show, I think it was right before the show or during either. It was right before the show. I learned of the existence of these potato chips, the IHOP Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruity Potato Chip. And Joe apparently was aware of the fact that they existed, and he knew of a place that he could get some, and he did, and he actually mailed me some, which arrived yesterday. They are strawberry topped pancake with syrup and bacon flavored potato chips.
Yo,
I've never had them before.
Sounds wild.
But I'm gonna try one today. So like, he's like, "Have you tried them?" I was like, "No, I figured I'd just wait till the show, bring the whole thing full circle." So let me see if these are gonna make me throw up or not. Let's see. All right.
Don't just eat one chip. Grab like three of them and just stuff them all in your mouth at once. That way you get a full real bite.
No, it's all about
the whole bag in your mouth.
Oh yeah.
I mean, if he could fit it, I would suggest that too. But
with all the caloric load and only get to taste it one time, you guys are crazy. No, one at a time. And also, I just ate three. So I will say they leave a weird aftertaste. Yeah, I can tell that fast. But I like them very much. They have the syrupy taste that you can get from a chicken and waffle potato chip.
Those were weird.
But there is an actual hint of fruity flavor or sugariness, at least, to them that can at least be definitely considered a synthetic strawberry. Like, I'm not sure about the bacon part, though.
How does fruit and potato work? Like, the combination of flavors, does it work well, or is it, like, more confusing?
Not at all. I mean, again, once you've had chicken and waffle chips and some of the crazy flavors that have already come out, I mean, yeah. Also, when you get a good, really decent breakfast plate with all the fixings stuffed on it, your breakfast has already been courting with each other anyway. Pancakes and potatoes is getting it on your plate. Oop, there it is. That's nature taking course. Well, yeah.
You guys ever had like French fries and ice cream?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So, I feel like it'd be like that.
Have you done the thing with I think for me at least, it started with Wendy's. It was a big known thing to go to Wendy's to get a chocolate frosty.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, get a chocolate frosty in their fries. And I was like, whoa, this works.
Oh, yeah, that's solid.
Mm-hmm.
Delicious.
Classmates, when we would go on field trips and go to Wendy's, they would take a nickel, stand it up on its side, and then slam the salt shaker on it. That way, the next person who picked it up, there was just a hole in the bottom of the salt shaker, and my classmates were all assholes.
Yeah, I can relate to that. There was a lot of that going on in my school time, too. But hey, the important part is it didn't pass on.
Did you guys not like my...
We were dickheads when we were in school.
Damn, isn't like my April Fool's Steam codes?
What Steam codes? Steam codes?
Joe knows what I'm talking about.
You wiener.
Did you just type an IC wiener Steam code?
No, I posted in our general Steam codes, and it spells out through the first letter April Fool's.
And then people are like, why would you do this?
Yeah, I think Lloyd
you
was
teased
upset,
us with free games.
I posted a couple
free games.
someone call that the worst sort of tease.
Oh, it was great. So many people were like, hey, what game is this for? It's not working. I keep getting an error code, and I'm like, read it down. They're like, oh, my God.
How many times were you calling an asshole?
I thought it was funny. I enjoyed it.
And that's all that matters when it comes to an April Fool's joke.
Exactly.
So.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know how it works. I know the deal. I know the score.
Any other good jokes anyone wants to talk about, or should we dive into reviews? Because we got a bunch of games to talk about tonight.
We can do the reviews.
Dive.
We dive in.
I hope you like diving.
All right. Let's get started with Felix the Cat, developed by Konami and Limited Run Games, published by Konami, released March 28th on Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $24.99. The iconic cartoon Felix embarks on a heroic journey to rescue his girlfriend Kitty from the professor. Players will battle various enemies utilizing cannonballs, flying discs, and other maneuvers to save the day. Chris, you're going to talk about this one along with Justin, who is a world record or former world record holder for the game. So tell us, what is the game? What drew you to the game? What makes the game fun? Tell us everything about Felix the Cat.
Okay. Do you want me to tell you about the release, or do you want to have Justin tell you about like the original game or something?
Do whatever you want to do. The floor is yours.
Chris, you kick it off. I'll fill in the gaps.
All right. So, yes, this is Felix the Cat. The I guess it's not a popular NES game. It's kind of a later era NES game, originally released by Hudson Soft. But of course, Hudson Soft is now owned by Konami, so it's it's been put out by Konami. There's many, you know, this is kind of a happy Easter thing because there's many ways that this game has come back from the dead through Konami, distributing it instead of Hudson Soft, and you know, of course, through limited run games. And also the property of Felix the Cat, I notice in general, for one, I mean, if you don't know, Felix the Cat is like literally the oldest cartoon animal. He's 105 years old this year. Yeah. But the one in this video game and the one that we all kind of know is actually from the 50s. So kind of, you know, about the same age as all the other cartoons we know. Cartoons are old, folks. But yeah, this is based on Felix the Cat, who is currently owned by DreamWorks. So when you boot up this game for the first time, instead of seeing the Hudson Soft and the Cat Productions, you see just a thing for DreamWorks. So now Felix is owned by the Shrek people. So this collection contains both the original NES Felix the Cat and the Game Boy port of the same, and a Japanese version of the game, which Wikipedia tells me never came out. So I actually don't know the facts on that one. I would defer to Justin if he knows. But yeah, this contains three versions of the same game, and like I said, it's a 1992. Action platformer, and yeah, I can toss it over to Justin if you want to describe what the game's actually like.
Sure. I mean, yeah, it's a pretty basic action platformer, so I don't know, just imagine Mario but with a cute cat and bright colors. So at
yeah,
least you
the fun
of the game is just you get a bunch of different power-ups. So if you're like, you get a cat with like a boxing glove, or like you're a cat that rides a dolphin, or you're a cat that rides a turtle underwater. I don't know how that works, but it works because video games.
Yeah.
So
you can also get a one-wheeled bike, or a, kind of a car, I guess, right? It's like a one-wheel car, however that works.
I'm not sure what it is. They call it a rocket car in the original, so whatever that means, but it's just got one wheel and it honks at people, so...
But yeah, it's all about like basically, you know, picking up power ups to you know, or bottles of milk, and all of his basically utilizing like, you know, Felix's magic bag, which is again from the 50s era of Felix the Cat onto today, and you're trying to save your girlfriend Kitty from Professor. Am I correct in that name? Because they call him Professor, and he is a professor, so one would logically just call him Professor.
Yeah, usually they just call it the Professor, so I don't know. It could be a Mario scenario with Professor. I don't know.
Nice, I like it.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. But yeah, so I found this game to be really fun. I'm actually a noob to this one because this is one of those NES games I never really got to pick up. And by the time I was really aware of it was when I was watching Justin play his speed run of it on doing speed runs on Twitch of it, which square_wave, by the way, if anybody is interested. Although I don't know, I guess you haven't streamed it in a while. But anyways,
nah.
Yeah,
it's been a good while. But
Felix is a pricey game too. Looking at it,
yeah,
eBay.
That's the thing. By the time I knew about it, it was already like a pretty expensive cart,
and like a good $90, $100 cart.
Yeah, and I think that may have gone down from the last time I saw it out and about, or maybe somebody was just overcharging. But yeah, it can get pretty pricey. I don't know if the Game Boy game is the same as far as that goes, but yeah, now
it's
that
also
I've actually,
pricey.
Oh yeah, figures. It's a good Game Boy game, actually. That's actually the first one I played through. Because I was like...
With box and instructions and all paperwork, $1,300.
Oh, wow, nice.
For the Game Boy.
That's what a bargain.
Cartridge only going for like $70 to $100.
Thimber, we just got a report in from the internet. Thimber says that he found out the professor's name is Professor Nutty Nutmeg.
What?
Can't confirm that in the, within the game's text, but that there you go.
I can say that if you're anybody who's listening or you are curious about some of the Felix cartoons, around the time they originally announced this game's release, I came across the 1980s animated movie that was released in theaters. Someone uploaded the whole thing to YouTube. Reviews are mixed, but I enjoyed it as a, you know, culture, a piece of the times, and might find yourself a bit enamored with some Felix non-game history too.
Yeah. When I was a kid, my mom was part of a VHS club. And so she would get like cartoons for us, like from that. Cause we didn't have like cable or anything, and there wasn't like, you know, satellite TV. So it's just like either watched like network TV if they had cartoons, or you got VHSs. And so because she was part of a video club, they of course procured the cheapest cartoons possible. And what could be cheaper than, you know, a cartoon literally from the silent movie era? So I watched a lot of Felix via VHS, along with a lot of Bob Clampett, Looney Tunes, like, you know, especially the racist ones, and lots of other oddities. So, you know, I was, lots of Betty Boop as a kid. So, yeah, I like Felix as a character. I actually think he's cool. I remember they've made many attempts to kind of bring him back into the limelight over the years. And I guess this is the latest one. But the cool thing is, I think that this is a... It's a great game because it is kind of overlooked, because I don't know if people know this, but in 1992, that's like when the NES was like really like putting out a lot of rad stuff, like, you know, and, you know, Hudson Soft is no exception here. The game's really smooth. I would say smoother than it looks even. And of course, in this collection, you get the usual things of, you know, you can throw on a CRT filter if you don't like yourself. You can turn on D-Flicker if you want to erase history. There's also...
I'm loving all of this.
Thank you. There's also a yellow border that you can turn on or off. There's only just the one. Then you have like your save states, and then you have a rewind feature, which, thank goodness, is silent. Because, you know, we've had... rewind features that create noises in the past. I think I recently complained about that on another game. But yeah, it doesn't have any like real, you know, it's not one of those kind of legacy re-releases where there's like, you know, a bunch of posters or the instruction book or anything like that. But I mean, you know,
the main gripe I'm hearing about this compilation is it's fairly bare bones.
Yeah, exactly. You don't really get any extras out of it. And, like, I mean, what I described is literally it as far as that goes. Like I said, you got your full screen and pixel perfect, and pixel perfect's like 1/8 of the screen. So, you know, if you really insist on playing that way, that's totally fine with me. But, yeah, I mean, we kind of seen this before with some of the limited run stuff. You know, I don't particularly care myself, because I usually end up looking at that stuff like once or twice, and then I just play the game. So it really is frosting as far as I'm concerned. But if that is something that's important to you, then just know that this game is pretty bare bones in that way.
Yeah, the way I look at it is, if you're paying a premium price on a product, and this is kind of a premium price for what is basically two classic games, I kind of worry that there's not enough there to justify the price, but I don't know how the games are. Justin, maybe you could talk more about this. How long are the games? Is it something that encourages replayability? What drew you to the game, and what made you want to speed run it?
Well, I don't know. What drew me to the game is, I mean, I was a kid when I first played it, and it was very accessible and felt good to play. Like, the controls are tight, which is, you know, wonderful. So it's not like a laggy, like really, well, at least the NES version is like, it feels really good to play. So that I enjoy. And like, level design is wonderful, like, considering it's just, I don't know, you travel throughout many different worlds. And
you get a nice variety out of this game, I think.
it has a huge variety of level design and a huge variety of like power-ups we were talking about earlier. And it's... I mean, of course, for me now, it's a relatively short game. But as far as casual play, I mean, it's pretty accessible to all skill levels. And
I mean, you could probably beat it in... So it's, yeah. Most NES games didn't last you 30 hours.
Yeah, you, I mean, you so could,
I expect
you could
this to be maybe like an hour.
Just above that for sure. But yeah, between an hour or two, depending on your style of play.
That's so, what I expect out of an NES game of this type.
Yeah. And it's good. And I played the Japanese version because I didn't know that existed. So I've played through that one already. And yeah, all of it seems basically the same. There's a few like sprite differences, but that's been it. I don't think anything else is... There's nothing new added. So that's... I was kind of sad about that, but also that's fine. And then, of course, the text during like the little story between levels that they have to, you know, where the professor is complaining and calling Felix to be like, I have your girlfriend. Give me your magic bag. That's, you know, it's in Japanese as opposed to English. And that's another difference, but there's not much. It's the same game. And I don't know, as far as what drew me to like speedrunning it was I discovered what speedrunning was, or that it was becoming more of a thing. And I was like, well, like this was the very first game that I ever beat as a kid, like of my own accord, you know, like no parents' assistance, no like siblings, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I had that. I was like, all right, well, this will be the first speedrun that I ever do. And that is what I went with. And I don't know, lived off that for quite a while.
Very cool.
And yeah.
All right, well, let us talk price and verdict on this. It is a $24.99 compilation. Chris, is the content there? Does it justify the price? What are your thoughts on everything?
Well, I mean, the content in terms of like, you know, here is a old video game presented in more or less one-to-one, you know, with save states and rewind. You know, and it's a Game Boy cousin, which I would just oversimplify the Game Boy version by saying it's a little slower and a little easier, but it's basically like kind of the same content more or less. But yeah, I would say that like $24.99 is a bit steep. I think that perhaps what this game's got going for it is that kind of late era NES sort of appeal, in that I think people are finally... You know, retro gamers who are always looking for the thing are kind of discovering Felix the Cat and a lot of the other kind of 1992 and onward games. Like, I feel like if, for instance, let's say Mighty Final Fight came out on a limited run compilation and it was just the game and then like one other version of the game or something, I feel like they would be fine charging $24.99 for that. That's like a $400 cartridge as well.
Jeez.
But like just an example of a really late era NES game that nobody got to play back in the day and, you know, some have discovered nowadays. So it's like when I think in terms of like late era NES games, almost all of which have been just completely blown apart by like resellers and stuff. I'm like, you know, that's a good price to have access to it in like an official capacity. And it's a great port. Like it runs great and it's, you know, it's exactly what you want out of it. And, you know, the only thing that's changed about it is the copyrights. So I would say in that sense, it's a buy it. But but anybody who like really just wants to look at like the, you know, just the bones of it, it's like this is an NES game for $25 digitally.
Yeah.
So, you know,
Justin, any thoughts?
It's yeah. I don't think the combination of like the NES and Game Boy port is probably worth $25. Like, I don't know. In my world, I always associate things to like, will I get 25 hours out of this game? Doubt it, unless you really enjoy like challenge runs or find some other reason to bring yourself back to it, because there's no story. Like, it's as simple as it gets, and there's no like, you know, new game plus features or anything, so it's but I of course love the game, so I bought it instantly. But
yeah.
You think it was worth it? Are you happy with your purchase?
Yeah, I am happy with my purchase. So, because then I can play it like on the plane now, because, you know, it's on the Switch. So if I'm traveling, which I'll be traveling tomorrow conveniently, and so I'm like, well, now I can play it without having to lug around a CRT or anything. So that in itself is nice.
And, you know, for you, anyway, it's a nice breezy 22 minutes and 56 seconds.
Yeah. Usually I try to do longer games, you know, to speed run for plane trips. I don't think there's any 25 minute plane trips around here. So.
Oh, yeah, true.
But the game you didn't even take off yet.
Yeah, that will probably happen.
Oh, shit.
So, but I'd say 25 is a little steep, but it's not, I don't know, it's not a complete waste.
So. I mean, I guess a thing to consider is that this is limited run we're talking about, so it has a physical version that they're trying to sell as well, so they can't really price it too low.
Yeah. On that front, because they're doing a physical version, there is no Xbox release and there is no PC release.
They
completely skip those two platforms because they won't do physical on them too. So I think that's kind of shitty that they won't release it digital on those platforms, even though they won't do physical. I don't know. Doesn't make sense to me, but whatever. Third game. Yeah. I'm not buying it, so it's not on Xbox. I'm not buying it. So.
But at least it's just cheaper. It is a cheaper means than buying the original cartridges and stuff, though. Because, like you were saying earlier, how everything's just kind of like skyrocketed in price, especially these later release NES games. So it is more affordable than the actual game itself or the original game. So that is nice.
But now I'm kind of like, I kind of want to buy the original now, just to have it. I like it a lot. I only really ever watched Justin play it for the most part before, but now that I played it, I'm like,
maybe the price will drop with this coming out.
Maybe. Sometimes that makes the prices go up, though. Yeah, I was concerned.
I'm assuming nothing will happen. It'll get forgotten again, just like Felix continues to do. Man, I will say there was... Like, my main thing, which drew me to buying the Felix game, was in the 90s, they had the, like, Twisted Tales of Felix cartoons, which is just, like the really trippy version. Like, if Felix started doing drugs, that's the cartoon, like, that shows that.
That was a great cartoon.
Yeah. I remember that. That was one of my, I was going to mention that as one of the revivals that they did. That was a pretty rad one, but I couldn't remember the full title, so...
So that's the fun one to watch, unless, you know, you enjoy the classic look. So, I don't know. That drew me in as a kid, so, yeah.
Yeah.
But
worth a YouTube dive, at least.
There you go. All right, well, we do have to move on. We have a bunch of other games to talk about. Justin, we're going to let you get going. Thank you so much for joining us and hanging out with us.
Thank you, Justin.
Thank you to have you on.
Nice meeting you, Justin.
Yeah. Good meeting you as well. Thank you. It was very fun.
Do you have any final thoughts or final words before we let you go?
No. Just, I don't know. Be good and wash your hands. So.
Nice callback. I will.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. All right. Well, thanks, y'all. Take care.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Have a good night.
Yep.
All right, next game to talk about is Dragon's Dogma 2, developed and published by Capcom, released March 21st on Series X and S, PS5 and PC for $69.99. Dragon's Dogma is a single-player, narrative-driven action RPG series that challenges players to choose their own experience from the appearance of their arisen, their vocation, their party, how to approach different situations, and more. Now in this long-awaited sequel, the deep, explorable fantasy world of Dragon's Dogma 2 awaits. Pernell and Aki, both of you played this. Pernell, how about you start? What's going on in Dragon's Dogma 2?
So I still find it funny that it's called Dragon's Dogma 2, because I might be blind. It might be because I'm thinking it might be because of the O and how they use the O, but there's no 2 in the title screen. It's just Dragon's Dogma there. So I've been thinking of this in a mental state as like just a re-envisioning of Dragon's Dogma if they had a bigger budget for it and better technology to produce it. So that's how I've been looking at this game. But though the narrative is a little bit different, it does have a similar arc in regards to the fact that your main character is a soldier who is chosen by the dragon, who's a mythical beast in this world's narrative. And it chooses you by beating the snot out of you, ripping your heart out of your chest, and eating it, and then flying off, leaving you as a I guess I don't want to say lifeless husks because you're clearly functional, but you are heartless and not in just the lovelorn form. In this sense, you're tasked with the idea of taking up the role of the Arisen, which is also what you become when he does this to you, seeking out the dragon and defeating him, therefore to, you know, engaging your role as the Chosen. And you will be taking a long time to do this because you are exploring this world, and it is set up in a way where first you start out after the narrative kind of gives you like a blank slate of like how things are going before they catch you up later with the actual truth, with you being in a bit of a prison situation. You're locked up. You don't know why. All you know is you're a slave in a slave camp. You get visions of your true destiny. You flee and you escape. And at this point, you are pretty much thrown into the world at large and quickly taught about your role and character. And that role comes with a very special form. And that is the ability to also summon what is known as a pawn. Pawns are sort of the mercenaries in this world that you can access. They can travel the rift between different worlds, those worlds being represented by each person's personal copy of the game. And they can be summoned to be, you know, put to work in helping you with exploring and taking on tasks. You have one personal one that you can create, which is done at the very beginning of the game, and then you get two more that you can hire in the game that are represented by other players' pawns that they created in their games. But once you've made your first pawn and potentially hired the other two, you are off to explore and do whatever. And there's a lot to do in this game. But before talking about, I guess, like the exploration in itself, I'll talk about what the main character and the pawns are capable of in the general sense. Each character can take on a vocation. Vocations are essentially job classes in this world. And that job class, it gives you a number of aspects to your character, both starting with the ability to have a series of basic and heavy attacks. They differ based on the class you're on. You get different equipment that you can put on, basically like sword, shields, you know, chest armor, chainmail, claw armor, the usual like. And all this is dictated by your weight class. And the weight class is determined by how you customize your character's actual stature. I wish I knew that before I did it because I made a small, nimble thief, and that thief can't carry shit. It's very frustrating, but I have lived with it. I didn't take my decision back, which is a good thing, because if I didn't start the game over, it costs a lot and takes a while before you can actually change your character.
It does kind of make sense that a little character can't carry as much as a big hulking character.
Don't get me wrong. Thematically, it makes perfect sense.
From it's the just sense funny of that I they did it in a game. Yeah.
In the sense of convenience, it's like, I wish I made a hulking muck, because now every time I hire a pawn, I have to have at least one person that can just lug all of my stuff around. It's ridiculous. That's who's carrying my camping kit, which I might
bring. I did some digging. The title screen does get addressed further in the game. Much further in the game.
Yeah, because I'm not much.
Spoilery.
Much
nothing. That's all I'm saying.
And I appreciate that, because it's just one of those things where there's a lot, aside from just normal life matters, there's a lot in this game to do. Exploration is a big proponent of it, and heaven help you if you're the type of person who likes to get all their questing done, because the way they designed this game, and I guess I'll jump back to, oh no, God, it got me off topic. Let me first talk about the character, then I'll talk about that. You have your limits of what your equipment you can wear and your weight and all that. But as you use a certain vocation or class, you will gain experience in that class in addition to your normal experience points. And as you level up the vocation, you can spend the class point or the vocation points you've earned using the character, as well as the level you've ascended to purchase new skills that can be associated with weapon skill slots that your character can have, and also augmentations, which is probably the cooler aspect of having a character build, because you can take augmentations, equip them, and take them between different character classes or vocations to kind of have more of a custom-built character. Sometimes you can use augmentations to make up for a weakness of a character. Like, you might have one that gives you higher defense or a higher bit of a weight capacity. Take that one and put it on a character who isn't able to carry as much, and then boom. It's a little bit of a buff there. So it's kind of fun to deal with that kind of thing. Now, to go back to the questing thing, because now that you have your character build, you have your pawn or three, it's time to go out and explore the wild, wild wastes of this massive freaking world. And as I was mentioning before, one thing is about this game is that if you're the type of person who wants to get every quest resolved and you want to get every quest done perfectly, you ain't doing it here, because Capcom has a bright idea to do like a sort of like auto saving system, and it's always at the most inconvenient time. And that's not so much a slight, so much as a, if you don't like that kind of thing, walk away. If you can deal with it, then it's not such a big deal. But to give an example, early in the game, there was a quest where I was tasked with rooting the Saurian Nest, which is a bunch of lizard men. I had to first take a bunch of explosive barrels and throw them at the actual nest to kill the Saurians while they slept. Did that no problem. Next thing the game said to do was to take a barrel of poison and dump it on the nest so to basically, you know, salt the land so they could never come back. Problem is, I was a little overzealous in my learning the controls of throwing versus dropping, and I threw the barrel into the river. I poisoned the town's water. The game instantly saved the game. I went back to town to talk to the guy. He was not very pleased with my poor performance. He gave me a little reward, but was like, yeah, I guess that was some sort of work. But I did absolutely try to reset the game the moment the barrel hit the wrong location, and it was like, nope. That is your mistake. You're going to live with that shit. And maybe that's a life lesson in and of itself. Life isn't about safe scumming. It's about taking all the consequences of your actions and growing from them. And I learned how to grow from poisoning a town. So, yay. But in addition to the aspect of, like, that element is the fact that, again, the world is massive and questing can take place all over it, in the sense that you might have a quest that starts over here, and then maybe you'll come across a component of that quest, I could even say maybe a few hours into the game at another location, at which point you might find yourself going, well, need to get back over there. How do I do that? Well, you might need to find yourself some time to go on a long run. You could hire an ox cart sometimes, usually during the day and if the service is available, to kind of cart you to certain towns that are within reach of the ox cart station. Or you can use waystones, which are very expensive, whether it be in-game currency or real-world currency. And since I refused to buy those things with real-world currency, I suffered the risk of the problem of having to do the long hiking. But, you know, the ox cart helps too. And the last component to potential questing issues that might drive somebody crazy, and then I'll stop talking for a bit and see what Aki has to say, and then maybe we can read back around between the both of us, is the fact that this game also has quests that are somewhat real-time-ish in that you might come across a person on the road that says, oh my God, my friend is missing. Please go help them. They were lost over on the side of the road there. Normally, a lot of games, it might be, okay, well, I'll take the quest and resolve it whenever I feel like it. Mm-hmm. But in this game, once you take that quest, if you don't go do it immediately, that person will die. And that quest will have a very unhappy ending. So, don't be surprised if you come across the occasional quest where it is the moment you see it, you got to do it. There is no stopping the train to, you know, resolve your checklist of options. I've been rambling a lot, and there's a lot of stuff that can be said about this game that hasn't even been touched, actually. So what do you have to say so far, Aki?
Well, you've hit a lot of things I wanted to comment. For combat, I want to focus on some of the problems with the game first and then talk about things I liked about it, because I'm a negative Nancy.
Nancy?
I like that we can hear the smile creeping up into her voice as she says that.
I know,
that
it's an audible grin.
I love it.
Yeah, I have the biggest shit-eating grin right now.
Well, don't be too mean.
I live for that, so, you know, tough cookies. combat in this game is, I really like the combat. There are some problems with it. Namely, I'm really used to like having a lock-on system. There isn't one, so be prepared for that. You're going to miss with your hits a lot. So much.
Get good.
You're going to have to get good, and not all enemies get staggered by your attacks, but you get staggered by theirs, by God, and they will fuck you up. There's no getting good on that. Fuck you. I came across an issue. I don't know if either of you have had this issue. Like, I've stayed in the camp like 7 times total, because after that I fucking gave up on it. 6 out of those 7 times, my camp was fucking destroyed, and I had killed everything in the vicinity.
Oh,
I don't know if I'm just
maybe didn't kill everything.
Super unlucky or what. Did you guys have that issue?
I'll be honest with you. I don't know, because I haven't had that happen yet, but I genuinely thought it was because I was killing everything in the vicinity before taking a camp break.
So angry.
Because I'm paranoid about things. And I'll be honest with you, it's very possible that you might have just missed something, because there have been times where I'm like, I should camp. No. Let me just do a quick circle around to make sure I'm not screwing something up. And sure enough, it's like a freaking goblin camp just chilling up on a ridge somewhere. And I'm like, well, good thing I coaxed them to come down and get their asses kicked, because otherwise I'd have lost my 7-pound camping gear. Which, by the way, camping gear weighs
fucking damn camping much. Gears are expensive as shit when you go through them that quick.
Mm-hmm.
They cost so much money when they get destroyed so readily if you're me, and it's like, fuck you. Because everyone else is like, oh, you get it like once every 3 times if you're unlucky. Fuck you. I've gotten it like 99% of the time. What the fuck?
And that sucks to hear, too, because without camping, oh my god, world traversal can be brutal, because when nightfall comes, all hell breaks loose out in the woods.
That doesn't actually bother me that much. I'm actually pretty okay with that, yeah. My issue is, in this game, it takes kind of a Dark Souls 2 approach to when you die, and everyone who's played Dark Souls 2 is groaning very hard right now, and I understand, I agree with you, it sucks. Every time you die, you can either choose to go back to the last time you stayed at an inn, which is probably 5, 10, 20 fucking hours ago, or you can go back to wherever the last manual save you made or auto save that replaced it was. And the problem with that is every time that happens, you lose some of your max health, and you can only get that back by staying at a camp that gets destroyed by monsters every time you fucking camp, or when you go and spend a ton of gold to stay at an inn.
RPG standards, inns are expensive.
Yeah, they every one of them you come across seems to get more and more expensive, and they start off at like 1,000 gold, and it is an expensive bitch to start off. When you're much later into the game, that's not fucking beans, really, but at the start, that's a lot for a fairly sizable period of time into the start. Because the first one starts at 1,000, the next one's 15, and the one after that is 1.5, and the one after that is 2, and that's so much money. So much money.
What else?
I don't like the weight restrictions that they put on characters. I've never found that to be a good mechanic just in general for any game. It's not fun to get encumbered and overweight and have your ability to move and your stamina recharge and all this other stuff go to shit because you're collecting things in a game where you have to collect things so you can fucking survive. It drives me crazy. Also, allies, when you're in the middle of combat, will take stuff and use it. Be it, whether they've picked it up or you've picked it up, it doesn't matter. You might be trying to save those items for something, for some reason. They don't give a shit. If you run out of energy, they're going to take one of the potatoes and shove it down your fucking throat, even if you're trying to save those potatoes to make a super
healing
item.
Eat your potatoes!
Exactly. They don't care, and I don't like that, and I would really be like, can you guys fucking quit it? Because my stamina will recharge.
What's that?
Still eating your potatoes?
Well, I'm taking my time on it. I don't think anybody on this podcast wants to hear me crunching up a storm with my delicious strawberry pancakes. But
I'm crunching on some Cheez-Its, but I'm muted.
Yeah, I want to hear you.
Those are a majority of my issues, is stuff like that. And the autosave locations sometimes really kind of suck. Most of them are okay, but like, I went to a cave system, and I found a chest at one of the dead ends, and I opened it, and it was the last place I had to go, so I was going to leave, and in between me and the exit suddenly spawned in a shitty little goblin that I didn't care about, and a hobgoblin, which is a heavily super fucking armored, very strong, weapon-wielding, ginormous health sponge bastard who killed me for over an hour straight as I tried to bypass him because I couldn't do any damage.
Good.
Yeah, I think
there's
I will
no
say
getting
this, though.
Good at an insta kill person. No, he hit me once and I would go from max health sucks. To no
now,
health.
I will say this in agreement with Aki on this game. Do not come into this game thinking that it is an easy rider, good time, because while it can be a good time in the fun level, it is not a good time on the casual level. You will get the shit kicked out of you frequently. Like
combat, when you're actually able to fight and put up a fight, it is super fun. I really like it. The exploration, super fun. But then the game just occasionally decides to walk up to you and just cunt punt you as hard as possible. And you're like, why? We were having so much fun. Why would you do this? That is so mean. And then they'll just walk off and you'll pick yourself back up after a while and you'll love it again. And then they just come over and hit you in the back of the head with a frying pan. And it's like, why? Just let me have fun.
I mean, if a cyclops falls in the woods and no one's around to hear it, does it make a sound? Oh, yes. It still makes a sound. And even if you're not around, you're going to hear it. And then it's going to beat the stuffing out of you.
God, the first time I ran into the cyclops, I about shit my pants. I was just clearing places. I hadn't even gotten to the ruined one that you go to, whatever it's called. I hadn't even gotten there when I found my first Cyclops. I was so underpowered and underleveled.
GG.
But I will say this about the Cyclops and a number of other beasties in this game, for that matter. One of the coolest aspects of this game, and one of the reasons why I chose my starting vocation as a thief, even though every vocation could technically do this, is the fact that it has the ability, the concept where you can climb on top of monsters' backs and just beat them over the head with a knife.
That is really cool.
It's so fun. And if it's like a giant flying animal, it can take you up sometimes. There's something enjoyable about the fact of getting on the back of like a griffin, thinking you're stabbing. It's like, whoa, buddy, I'm tired of this. I'm going to go home. And it just picks you up, flies you up, and you just go falling. Like, shit.
You can actually grab onto smaller flying animals and they'll fly you too. And because some of the smaller flying animals will grab you, pick you up, raise you up, and then drop your ass for damage. Because fuck you is the name of the game. You can actually jump and grab onto them instead. And they will fly you around a bit.
Treasure chest. There was a treasure chest I couldn't figure out how to get to for the life of me. And there were harpies around that chest.
That's how. I should
have grabbed one of those bastards. God damn it.
Now speaking of grabbing things, we got to determine if Dragon's Dogma 2 is worth grabbing. It clocks in at $70. What do the two of you think?
Personally, I feel like this game is a lot of fun. I will say I am not a big fan of MTs, but my take on that is, both Aki and I kind of explained in the review that you will be walking. You'll be walking a lot. So if you're the type of person who's going to boot this game up thinking they're going to play for like 5-minute or 10-minute increments or whatever.
No, you're not.
No.
If you're not comfortable with the idea of having to occasionally double back on some stuff, maybe take an ox cart and then hoof it from the location there to where you need to go, this ain't the game for you. But if you're okay with those things, and the idea of some freaking ass-kicking combat is in your up your ante, and the feeling of genuine exploration, because this game will give you that in spades, I do think this game is a legit buy and worth your time.
Hockey?
As for me, I think if you like really hard RPGs, total buy it immediately, go have fun. You're going to love it. If you prefer the more casual, more simple stuff that isn't going to rake you over the coals every couple of hours just for the hell of it, then I would suggest getting it on like a 50% sale or something, because I still think it's a really good game. It's really fun when you're having fun. It just occasionally wants to brain you in the back of the head for no discernible reason. So I think that's kind of the dichotomy there. If you prefer your RPGs a little more simple, a little more easy, casual, wait for a sale. If you really like the hard stuff, the crunchy stuff, this is so for you.
All right, sounds good. Moving on, next game, Manic Mechanics, developed and published by 4J Studios, released March 7th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $24.99. In Manic Mechanics, up to four players pull on their overalls and head to the auto-obsessed Octane Isle, looking to make a name for themselves as traveling mechanics. Whether played solo or with friends, co-op or versus, Manic Mechanics is plenty of comedic chaos to go around. Andy, tell us about your time with Manic Mechanics.
Hey, it's my turn. Yay.
Hey.
Yay. Manic Mechanics is exactly what it sounds like, a chaotic game where the player and up to three friends can become master mechanics. You do this by fixing all sorts of vehicles, from cars to submarines and even a few alien spacecrafts. You work your way through six of the island's themed neighborhoods, from Betty's Scrapyard, the Aquatic Park, and on to the Haunted Bay, just to name a few. Learning from each master mechanic along the way and avoiding all manner of obstacles and hazards. Each player is able to choose from one of 29 unlockable characters and travel around in their own vehicle in the unlockable open world of Manic Mechanics, taking away that frustrating control of a single car that you get from similar themed titles. Each area contains five main levels along with one alternate level experience, complete with their own challenges and list of vehicle repairs. Additional parts are introduced within each new neighborhood, along with some relatable challenges. For example, the Aquatic Park has the player fixing submarines, introducing propellers and air tanks to the list of repairs, along with whirlpool and water-based traps to avoid. While the Alien Ranch presents both spacecrafts and trucks to be repaired, all while avoiding being abducted by a circling spacecraft or being crushed by a stampede of cows running through your workspace. Even with similar tasks and themes, all the sections in the game feel special and like really never like you're playing the same level twice, which was very nice. Vehicle parts, along with the occasional premium parts, are provided through a conveyor belt running through a section of the level. Each piece, including the engine, tires, computer chips, or grills, along with like 15 other items, are taken to one of five specific fixing stations. You have either the pump up, paint, charge, repair, or sanding stations, in which the player will enter some kind of button mash or stick movement to fix the object. This can be turned off as well to make the game easier for some people and only requires holding a button to fix those same objects.
Yeah, it's a very cool bit of accessibility. I used it myself when playing because I didn't want to mess around with all those timed button press. Like, I want to get shit done. And
yeah,
it's really convenient to have that option there. And I think it leads to a better game, honestly.
It really is. Like, I turned that on for a little while. I kind of enjoyed doing all the different, you know, like button movements and stick movements. You know, you gotta remember what each one does. There was a few that I pulled up and I was like, okay, why is this one not working? And it was like, oh yeah, I gotta press it over and over again or something. You know, you gotta keep it in the green. But that was really nice too. I was thinking about, you know, playing the game with my kids, and I know they would get very frustrated, like moving back and forth and doing all kinds of different things to remember it. So that was definitely a nice added feature they put in there. Players can do basic movements, move, dash, interact, and fix objects, along with a throwing ability, which I thought was really cool. And once thrown, objects will generally magnetize toward their specific station if you throw them at that station, or also onto the vehicle. So it made running around the map a little bit easier, too. A three-star scoring system pushes the challenge in each level based on timing, vehicles repaired, premium pieces installed, and extra parts finished. In a single-player game, the difficulty isn't too high. I didn't think it was too high. To complete each level with at least three stars. Although it does get a little bit challenging, you kind of got to get in the zone, you know, to get that. But in multiplayer
game, auto zone.
Get in the zone, yeah. And so in multiplayer though, chaos is like super ramped up,
and you're running into each other, and you're getting the score like pretty quick. You know, I played it with my my wet ass couch friends, you know, and we got the score every time, but it was like pieces were flying. Do you know the wet ass couch? The wet ass couch is like a co-op couch that stream that I do with a couple of buddies of mine every once in a while. So I don't know where the name came from.
Did you get playing together? Like, did you get a 4-player game going?
Yeah, we got a 4-player game going. It was cool. Everybody kind of gets their own section because there's only, you know, most of the levels, there's like 4 sections, you know, sometimes 5. But we each had our spot, you know, but it did get crazy because it was like I was working on the tires and I had a buddy at the conveyor belt just like chucking tires at me. So I had like a pile of tires I was like running through, you know, and he was doing that same thing with everybody else too. It was like a pile of engines, you know, and just random parts like all throughout the map, you know. But yeah, it was pretty wild. And then you're like running into each other and you're like falling through pits, you know, or there's like lava that comes up and like roasts you too. So that just made it crazier. Game has a very colorful palette along with a very simple like background soundtrack. I was trying to like listen in and I feel like it's the same, pretty much the same song like in every level or some variation of it. But it wasn't like bad. It was very very like a positive, you know, mood against the chaotic gameplay, I guess. Nothing in the game felt really jarring or out of place, you know. I thought everything ran really smoothly. And also, I would say, while some similar titles can feel like a little frustrating, Manic Mechanics like felt very casual and fun, you know. Even with like the timer going, I tried my hardest to just like run through the level very easily to get 1 out of 3 cog wheels, you know.
Yeah.
And it was super easy to achieve that, you know. It didn't feel like I was rushed, you know. And even sometimes I was kind of just playing, you know, casually, and I got 3 cog wheels, so that was awesome. If you do happen to be looking for a stressful time, there is like online and versus modes available too. There's scored leaderboards as well too, so you can kind of check. I was like looking at a couple of my friends who have the game too and trying to beat their score, which I did. But I was unable to find an online match, so I did play both single player and 4-player co-op, and I enjoyed all of it. I would say anyone who is a fan of like the Overcooked games or like Moving Out or Tools Up, you know, those are essentially like multitasking workplace games. It's funny that we have games that are like job based, you know.
What's the name I've heard for it? Chore Core?
Chore Core, exactly. Yeah, that's a solid name for it too. Yeah, I would say any Bree Chore Core that game, they would enjoy it, you know. Bree said that. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, so I would say, yeah, if you like any of those, I mean, I like Overcooked, you know, and I like Moving Out. I haven't tried like Tools Up or anything like that. So, but I enjoyed it. I thought it was a great game.
Well, it clocks in at $24.99. What are your thoughts on Manic Mechanics?
Like I said, if you enjoy those chore core games, this is along the same route, you know, as those are too. So I would get it, you know. Yeah, that seems like a pretty good price for it. You know, there's plenty of content and plenty of replayability as well.
Very cool. All right, Andy, that is it for you. We will let you get going.
Awesome. Good to be here.
Night, Andy.
Thank you as always for coming on, hanging out with us, doing your thing. You have any final thoughts, final words before we let you go?
Well, I hope you guys have a wonderful night and, you know, you all recovered from my April Fool's prank on you. And
son of a bitch.
Yeah. Enjoy, guys. I'm looking forward to the next one with you guys, as always.
Night, night, Andy.
Good night.
Have a good night.
Later, guys.
Peace. All right, next up is...
Wow, did somebody say chore core? Because it's time for... Okay, sorry, Joe. I didn't mean it.
Go ahead and introduce it.
Did somebody say chore core? Because it's Sunny Cafe. Hey.
Developed by Game Nobility and East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft, released March 27th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $14.99. In the rainy season, the point when we met, it's you letting the dark clouds that around me dissipated and turn into sunny days. Therefore, this cafe is named after the sunny days that you like. It is called Sunny Cafe. Brooke, what is Sunny Cafe?
Well, it's a visual novel with romance elements that seems upbeat, cheery, and normal. And for once, that's what we have. We haven't been burned here. This is exactly what we think it might be, based on the title. This isn't Doki Doki or Had a Full Boyfriend. No bait and switch here. No devolving into psychological horror, any sort of mech fighting business. There's no deep supernatural angst, no time traveling suicide, no violence. And no yanderes. Sorry, Otome community. But wait, before you stop listening, Otome fans, I want to say really quickly before y'all leave, if you're curious about Sunny Cafe, because you saw that it's a visual novel with a male MC and female dateable characters, and you're wondering if this is a nice, reasonably happy-go-lucky and wistful dating game where you can romance females without it becoming a very steamy or outright hentai or porny type of experience. Just good
sorry, clean talking Aki.
And fun. Sorry.
I'm sad.
There's a reason. But we got some stuff for Aki in here. Stay tuned. I'm going to give you a couple shout outs in here. But yeah, when it comes to the sexiness, nothing too sexy. It's still having some sweet, slow rolling romantic tension. This is that game. This game may be played via the male gaze technically, since we are playing as a man, Bowen Wu, and this game screen is our view. But that's where the stereotypes for cis male targeted dating games needs to end for this game. I find this game to be very wholesome and appropriate for almost all ages. And while we're definitely checking girls out and trying to date them, we're not checking them out with any lewd, suggestive terms that might make anyone uncomfortable. That being said, and I did mean what I said when I said this game at no point gets too suggestive or porny or sexy. Now that that's been established, let's start where the game starts. Chapter 1, where we meet our first love interest, which is titled Encountering in the Shower. Now, I don't know about y'all, but when I think about an encounter in the shower, I'm only thinking about one thing, and it's...
After dark.
Oh my god, that was really well timed.
Healthy goodness.
There you go. Okay, I was gonna say I let Aki handle the F-bombs. But yeah, so I'm reading the title of the game. This is happening before there's any dialogue or descriptors. Encountering in the shower, I'm like, oh my god, what kind of game did I ask Joe for? So I'm only thinking
one
thing.
It is T-rated. We have to put it out there. It's not M-rated. It is T-rated.
T-rated. No, it kind of gave me a little... I like to go in blind, but yeah, get your head out the gutter, Brooke, because it's the opening of the game. We're in school, we're at college, and we're hanging out outside when a really lovely young lady comes up to us. I want to take a second to talk about the writing here. It's very detailed, more detailed, especially for in physical descriptions of people, how they look, how they move around us and emote and our environments we're in. Visual novels are known for being novels with visuals, but this game is absolutely a labor of big love in the writing department, and the creators of this game are not content to rest on their laurels and not explain to you what's happening as if we had no visuals at all and this is a regular book. So here's how we meet our main love interest in this game in day one, chapter one, Encountering in the Shower. We have a few descriptions of the school, and then we launch into the luscious green branches on the side of the road sway in the breeze, intertwined with the sound of cicadas chirping, as if forming a symphony that only belongs to summer days. As I am just about to pass by the library entrance, a voice suddenly speaks softly behind me. The person behind me lightly taps me on the shoulder. I turn around to see a petite girl only coming up to about my shoulders. She has long curls that are inky black. She now squints her large and vivid eyes into playful slits as if she's trying to make something out clearly. Perhaps she's short-sighted and forgot to bring her glasses. Her waist-length hair ruffles gently in the breeze as her tiny hands clutch lightly at the end of her skirt. A faint blush colors her cheeks as though she's slightly frustrated. And the next line of the game is, she just said. And now we have our first choice. What did the girl just say? Crap. We weren't listening. We were checking her out. Crap, 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 crap. What to do? This is Brooke speaking again and not the writing, if you couldn't tell. Do we admit we weren't listening, or do we ask her if she was talking about the literature building or whatever? I'm going to leave us there because I brought this up for a reason. You know how earlier I implied the anime dating games where the main character is a man and the love interests are women get a bad reputation for mostly not all being the most wholesome games in the universe. Well, there's another thing these games also sometimes have a bad reputation for, not having any choices. You just press A all game and you just read the whole game. Now, we can make fun of Otome female-centric main character games all we want. Join me on another episode sometime. We will truly roast Otome. It is very roastable and laughable. It's my favorite genre. But Otome usually has choices and therefore gameplay. Suffice to say, I let out a sigh of relief when I saw a choice early on. Now let's fast forward into the story a bit. We're still chapter one. We're going to college in Taiwan, but we also have inherited a coffee shop from our grandparent. We're in the coffee shop one evening and it's pouring down rain. We're alone, the coffee shop's closed, and we're just sitting there thinking about that random girl we met on the first day of school a while back with the inky black hair. We only talked to her for a second, but we remember her and her tiny hands and her ruffly skirt. We wonder if we'll ever see her again. Aki, can you guess what happens next at this moment in the game?
Filthy perversions in my wildest dreams.
So close.
And only that.
So close. You almost got there. No, there she is coming through the door of our coffee shop. It's her. And she is soaking wet her clothes because she's been running through the rain to try to find shelter. Now she has, and it's your coffee shop. You show her the bathroom, you give her a few towels. She apologizes profusely a lot for no reason, of course. And once she gets cleaned up, you offer her some coffee. She goes, no thanks, I don't like coffee because I don't like bitter flavors. You go, hey, common misconception, but coffee doesn't have to be bitter, girl. She's like, what? Her mind is blown. And you make her a special coffee just for her with a nice coffee-making mini-game that this game includes. We have several mini-games in this game.
But do you make her hot coffee?
Ooh. Yes, you do. Okay, and there you have it. You've just had your encountering in the shower. That's right. That's where the chapter name comes from. We were talking about rain, not a steamy room for getting clean at school or without your best friends by your side. And we'll talk a little bit about the localization of that in a minute. So that's my preview into the story here. Let's talk.
I drank coffee in the shower before.
Hey, nice coffee shower, nice shower beer. I like it. I like a shower matcha. Okay, I'm kind of sad because my house we moved into doesn't have a bathtub, and you never know what you
fucking
got.
Fucking yeah!
All I've got is a shower. Anyway.
Anyway, I got to give a quick shout out to Raider Biz, who just came in with another sub for the 24th month. Raider Biz, always good having you here.
24.
Thank you so much. Indeed.
That's the highest number.
It's actually not. We have someone who's like 6 years.
Oh. Whoa.
Yeah, it's crazy. Okay. It is ridiculous.
Okay,
but, thank you, Raider Biz. Yeah, awesome. Many thanks to you, Raider Biz. Enjoy the emotes. Enjoy using the kitty cats and the dancing milk. But Sunny Cafe, is there dancing milk in Sunny Cafe?
Well, there's milk that is splattered throughout coffee. So yes, I would say so. I think we got there. So yeah, let's talk my favorite part of this game. Although it's close, I like a lot of parts of this game. It's almost the writing, but it's not quite the writing for my favorite. My favorite part of this game is the art. Not just the sprites, which are all gorgeous. They're really cute. Not just the chibi art versions of the different main character sprites, which not all visual novels come with. They're adorable. They're very well done. And everything you would ever want from chibi characters used to supplement VNs during mini games and comical moments when a regular fleshed out sprite just won't do. I love the art, not just the backgrounds, which are detailed and classy, especially the ones inside the cafe. They are intense. You can look and look forever and see something new in each background in the cafe. In fact, you're incentivized to do this because there are tons of Easter eggs in this game, giving you tangible in-game rewards as well as achievements if you're not playing on Switch. I read about this today. I actually am playing it for Switch, but I thought that was really cool. So there are Easter eggs hidden throughout the backgrounds of this game. And if you click on a special item that might have a bit of a sheen to it, looks a bit like a sticker, or maybe just looks a little odd and is sticking out to you, like it might be something worth noticing, you can click on it, hover on it. You may unlock a new type of coffee, maybe a bit of knowledge, or even a decoration that you can use for your cafe. I've never seen this in a visual novel. In addition to adding in different coffee minigames to this game as well, we also have this almost seek and find collector element. Yeah, I've never seen that before. Not the norm. Very cool. The UI of this game is even really, really good. I love the menus. We don't always see this in games where the original languages in English. UI looks amazing. If you use even the cursor, if you use the controls of a controller as opposed to just the touch screen, you get a tiny explosion of coffee beans wherever you put your cursor on the screen and a little sound effect of rattling beans. The cursor itself, when you're tapping through the game like this, it's actually huge. It's a big old orange triangle. It's much bigger than most of the text in the game. It's even bigger than the torso of our main love interest. I find the cursor itself to be a little bit distracting. But am I complaining about it? Nope. It's a huge flex they give us this choice, and we have so many extra little details because we don't have to use that cursor. We can just use the touchscreen to click through the dialogue like you would normally do. I like the voice acting in this game. I don't have a ton to say about it, but not only are all the characters in this voice in-game voiced, including your character, the main character. That's not always a thing. I just really love the voice acting. The casting is dead on. Even though it's in Taiwanese and I can't understand it audibly, I think the casting is great and it adds a lot of character to the characters. The music. We've got a nice jazzy soundtrack. It's happy. It's not too happy. If it was too happy, we'd probably be turning into a psychological anime horror halfway through, or they're about to like Neon Genesis Evangelion us, if you know what I mean. They're not, and the music is smooth, it's fun, it's groovy, and you can get lost in it and keep it popped on while you do your IRL chores. I give y'all a solid B+ for music on here. I thought it was really good. Mini games. Some might argue the cooking elements in this game, in this form of barista, cafe owner mini games, are more fleshed out than a lot of actual cooking games are. Those people would be me. I am them. If you visited the show before, you know I like to mostly review if I can. I love my anime dating games. I love my farmy stuff. And I really, really love my cooking games. And it's all connected, baby. I don't know where I wrote that in my notes, but I decided to just read that line anyway. and I played and reviewed a healthy amount of cooking games at this point in my life. Let me tell you, these little mini games are good. They're cute, they're engaging, and they just work. And they come with real life coffee and drink facts. Everything you learn in this game about coffee and cafes in Taiwan is real. You'll accumulate real barista knowledge to impress your friends and inky-haired love interest in real life in this game. Remember when the girl we like said she doesn't like coffee because it's bitter? Well, she shouldn't have said that, because once she did, she needed to sit down and listen to a speech on that concept by us, the main character, Bowen Wu. Once she says that, you proceeded to word vomit an essay at her about coffee, how much you love coffee, how cool it is. Here's 50 facts about coffee. She's a little overwhelmed, but this is an important foreshadowing to much to come in this game. As a neurodivergent person with my own special interests and hyperfixations, one of them being cooking games and anime dating games, it is my extreme opinion that this game is about a smattering of neurodivergent characters whose special interest is coffee, and they are very hyperfixating on it. As you get to know characters in this game, including yourself, Bowen Wu, the main character, you will be subjected to, sometimes in the text, what feels like people reciting Wikipedia pages on different types of coffee and fun facts they've memorized because coffee is just their favorite thing in the world. If you didn't learn what a Dalgona was in Squid Game, bud, you're going to learn it here. And it's a good thing because those are freaking delicious. And I, personally, Brooke Poole, usually do not like coffee because I find it to be so bitter. Joe and I were literally just talking about this 4 days ago.
But I drink soda.
Yeah, we love it. I like my energy drinks. Okay, localization, and let's wrap this up. There are strange choices in the writing, but it's great writing. I think we covered how strange the choices are in the example with the initial chapter title and what the title actually meant, re-shower. Throughout this game, I'm noticing some grammatical and spelling errors and some things that just don't feel like they were given a final localization edit for English by a team of native English speakers. Now, if you've listened to my countless other review games where I say those exact words in my review, I tend to be annoyed or disillusioned or like I'm kind of unhappy or grumpy with that choice because it feels like we cut corners, like we leapfrogged over very important steps to successful localizing a game in the desired language. This is the first time I am telling you it feels like this was ultimately localized by non-native English speakers, and it's just because I want to mention it in the review so you think that I didn't notice it. I noticed it, okay? I don't care this time. I'm not really complaining here, because the writing is so good and easy to follow and has such heart and is just fun to read. I have a hunch that this game was given a final go-over language-wise, probably by one of the original creators of the game, probably by someone who does have a pretty decent grip on the English language. We can feel that in the descriptions of the first person we meet in our college. I do not feel like this is necessarily a lazy choice coming from this game. I think it's fine. And we can just get over the little hiccups or opportunities to point and laugh like we did in Chapter 1 and move on and enjoy the game for being high quality. We don't have to ironically enjoy it. Localization aside. Final note, accessibility. It's a visual novel. This could be your very first video game and it would be fine for you. You would survive, even though it's not just a visual novel. Psych, it also has a few different games like we've mentioned, a little mini games for coffee. But even if you find one of these games challenging or you're stuck on a level, don't despair. There are accessibility options for you. You get unlimited retries. You're not going to fail a level. And once you succeed in a level on a basic level, you can skip it in the future in games if you do not find the mini game particularly engaging. And you don't want to do it, you want to just do the visual novels, that's fine. Final accessibility note, this game is accessible by being available in the Xbox Store. Great news for Akis. Great news for Ghost. That's it. That's my take. Had a good time.
Well, it's $15, and as you said, it is available on Xbox, as well as Switch, PlayStation, and PC. What are your thoughts on this one for $15?
I saw that like 5 minutes before the show started. I wrote that in there, and I literally wrote, great news for Akis. This is a steal of a deal. At this price point, I wasn't expecting the game to be voiced. I wasn't expecting chibi portraits in addition to regular ones. And I wasn't expecting an incredible UI and like so many mini games. This is a labor of love in its truest sense of the term. Despite some of its flaws and all the flaws I can really think of are localization, grammatical stuff, I find this game to be a treasure. If this description of the game sounds good to you, get it.
Cool. Sounds good. All right. Brooke, that's it for you. Are you sticking around or are you heading out?
I'll stick around a little bit. I'm going to pop off and rejoin on my phone. So be right back.
Okie dokie. We'll be here. Should we just wait? Sit here and wait the whole time.
I'll wait until Pernell starts Pepper Grinder.
Wait, that's where you're going to leave? Oh, man.
No. Okay, I'll wait.
It's Pernell's room. God.
Okay. Be right back.
All right, moving on. Next game to talk about is Pepper Grinder, developed by R-Eck, published by Devolver Digital, released March 28th on Switch and Steam for $14.99. Pepper Grinder is an action-packed 2D adventure blending traditional platforming with an alternate drilling mode that allows you to dive in and out of the earth like a dolphin swims through the water.
They stole my line.
Pernell, what is Pepper Grinder?
You swim like an elegant... Well, apparently I can't say you swim like an elegant dirt dolphin because they stole it. Well,
they put it in their Steam description. I don't think they stole it.
I didn't have to read the description. I didn't have to read the description. I reviewed it. All things aside, though, this is a game that I had been anticipating ever since I had seen their the announcement trailer for the game. And there's a reason for that, because there is a favorite game that I have that exists on the Game Boy Advance that gets pretty much no love from what I could tell. And it went by the name of Drill Dozer. It was one of Game Freak's very few games that they released that was not Pokemon related, involving a little thief girl who had access to a drill suit and drilled through lots of things to collect lots of loot. Never got a sequel. No re-release, nothing. It's just out there in the void now. So, of course, this game about a pirate girl who has her loot stolen and seeks it out by carrying her massive trusty drill with her immediately brought back feelings of that wonderful game. And I am grateful to say, spoiling early on in the review, that my feelings were not misguided because Drill Dozer so bad. Pepper Grinder is an absolute delight to play. The premise is simple. Like I said earlier, you play as Pepper, who washes ashore on an island. A pirate and her crony little gremlin thing steal her treasure and run off with it, or rather, abscond with it. And you seek to chase them down and get your stuff back. But for whatever reason, these people are excessively fast compared to you, which means you have to travel through multiple worlds, multiple stages, to reach the person that you just were standing toe-to-toe with just 5 minutes prior. So, how did the gameplay work in Pepper Grinder? Well, 2D platformer. Damn near all the time, your moveset is very basic in this game. You can run, you can jump, and you can hit the R trigger button to activate and run your drill. Now, the drill is used to kill enemies and also to burrow. And the developers of this game went that extra mile to get about as much mileage as they possibly could out of this drilling mechanic. Drilling is an absolute delight in this game. When you go underground or underwater or into the snow or into magma grounds, and which, by the way, in a lot of cases, they perform slightly differently depending on the surface you're in. But when you go to burrow, you are immediately propelled forward. So once you're in the ground, you don't have to hold the trigger button to use it anymore. You're dashing to the ground, and if you press the A button, you'll get like a bit of a jet propulsion where you kind of get a bit boost of speed, and you can use that to get through slightly faster. Also, if you use that A button ability just as you're exiting the ground area, you will get a burst of speed as you launch out of the ground in the direction that you come out from. So what this means is that the game immediately decides to chain up really fantastic platforming sections that bank on you leaving the soil, like diving into one zone, dodging or evading or getting around whatever obstacles are in the soil, exiting the soil at a very specific point at a specific angle, and then launching into another part of soil across a ravine or over some vines or what have you. There are enemies in the game as well that you can kill with the drill, but I'll be honest with you, they are probably the part that is, like, they're fun, but you're just going to get the majority of your fun just, like, blasting through stages and obstacles that are aligned with the drill mechanic. You might have to find yourself in a section where you have to drill below the ground to a flip platform, which knocks an enemy into a mine that is nestled in the dirt, which then sets off a chain reaction of mine blasts. You might find yourself in a situation where you are in the sky and you are launching yourself by cannon. Did I say cannon? Yes, I did, because another thing the drill mechanic uses in this game is they allow you to kind of socket the drill in certain elements that exist throughout the game. Like, you might come across like a cannon that I mentioned before, where you can use to propel yourself forward, or a gun or a key and other things, which I won't spoil. But it ends up being nice to say, oh, wow, what's this new thing on this level? Man, I can't believe it. And then, just when you think you don't have any actual physical abilities you can utilize, the game even introduces a new, like, actual button activation mechanic in the game before, like a grappling hook. Because at a certain point in the game, you start coming across stages that have hook points, which you can use to throw a grappling hook and swing around. And that results in even more dolphin antics, because you might find yourself drilling into the ground, exiting at the bottom of the ground into a pit, but then grabbing a wall with a grappling hook, doing a full rotating swing into another sock of dirt and just drilling into that dirt. And to say that they get the momentum right in this game is a disservice to how well they get the momentum right in this game. I have never had a point where I felt bored or exasperated, or at best the frustration might come from the fact that I wanted to get something just right. And it wasn't the game's fault. It was my fault, because I wanted to get it just right. Normal gameplay is you running through a stage, trying to get to the end of that level. While you're running through the level, you'll collect gem icons, or basically little money bits that can maybe hidden in the dirt or in secret pockets or alcoves, destroying objects on the map, etc., which can be used in a shop to buy expanded health that you can use until you die on the next stage, stickers and sticker pages to use in a sticker book, and light cosmetics such as wigs and like shawls for Pepper. But the other major item that you can find in stages as a bit of a collectible are 5 gold coins that are hidden in each stage. The gold coins themselves are utilized at that same store to purchase some of those cosmetics or some of those sticker pages and the like. But you can also use them to purchase a key on each world to access a hidden level or a bonus level. And those bonus levels, again, I really do feel like this was inspired by Drill Dozer, because similar vibe. Like, you unlock the one hidden level per stage, and it ends up being a lot of fun. They generally kind of go ham on the mechanic for that world and put you to the test on getting it just right. But it is a blast. If you find yourself beating a level and going, man, that level was great, I had a reason to go back and do it again, but I've already got all 5 gold coins. Well, there is a time attack that unlocks for each stage after you complete a level, and you can absolutely go there and pull your damn hair out as you wonder what game developer or game designer on the team came up with the times that they utilized to put down for gold medal ownership, because I will never have a gold medal, but I will sure as hell keep trying until I do, because holy hell, they make you work for it. But it's fun to try, and retries are pretty quick on the draw. You know, pause, restart, boom, you're back in the action. No issue. Music in the game, I enjoy quite a bit. It's not exactly like loud and booming, but it's got a nice relaxed, not even want to say relaxed, more like a tense but subdued tone to it. I keep finding myself getting access to some elements of the soundtrack where I go, man, I wish my podcast wasn't on hiatus, because I want this on the show right now. I want to feature it. It is really freaking good. Graphically, the game is very beautiful. It's It does. It wears its graphic style right on its sleeve. Like, it's very, like, you know, humorous and I guess animated. Like that aforementioned segment where I mentioned blowing up the tunnel with bombs. In the background, you see like entire walls of cave just shattering and falling apart. Very extra, but it adds a lot of positivity to the experience for sure. And there's like cool things like a giant walking in the background, just kind of being out there chilling, minding his own business. It's a wonderful game. I would not be surprised if it ends up being one of my favorites of this year, quite frankly. Well, I'm a big platformer nut.
With how much you're talking up Drill Dozer, I looked that up. That clocks in at like $100. We're talking about expensive retro games tonight. Pepper Grinder is not $100. It's only $15. So said it's like a dolphin. Did you finish the game?
Well played, sir. Well played. what does a dolphin sound like? I don't
like what I did. Did you ever see Flipper? Sounds like that. I don't know.
I don't have a dolphin sound effect. So like the best I can do is Coltrane.
Flipper sounded like that thing. Flipper was like, Flipper would go like a freaking like weird revving kazoo thing.
I don't think your phone microphone like that at all, because that like completely cut out for us.
It's like, wow.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was a microphone at first, and I thought he was like pushing his hand against the phone, and I was like, oh, he's getting literal with it. Get it, Flipper? He's stuffing with his that took me deep.
Out over here, flipping out. But no, this game, I give it sole recommendation. Like, it's a
nice.
It's just fun, and it's not going to take a ton too long, but it's long enough to feel like they did everything they could possibly do with this mechanic, and that's perfect for me. And you'll still feel like you want to do more level though.
Quick, make a doll fun joke. Maybe they'll use that as a box quote.
This doll is lots of fun. I don't know.
All I can say is I echo that sentiment.
Oh, shit.
I get it.
The tides of time up in here.
Echo.
I'm about to fight some aliens as a dolphin.
Fortunately, this game is nowhere near as hard as Echo. So there you go.
Any final thoughts on Pepper Grinder?
I mean, I guess I could say shake your way to the eShop right now and, you know, put some pepper in your step to buy this
game.
Oh,
my God.
Jesus. You're just rubbing salt in the wound with these puns.
Short dolphin meats. I don't know. There you go.
All right. Next game to talk about, 7 Day Heroes, developed by Akira Abe, published by Dolores Entertainment, released March 29th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $9.99. 7 Day Heroes is a retro style 2D platformer in which you control up to four different characters, each with their own unique abilities. Collect weapons and items with every character and aim for the goal. Enjoy the adventure on 30 stages in all 7 areas. Chris, tell us, what is 7 Day Heroes?
Okay, so 7 Day Heroes is a... Hang on, am I unmuted? Okay.
Yep.
I had to check. 7 Day Heroes is a side-scrolling platformer. It is done up in a 8-bit style that's kind of... I don't know, I would say it's reminiscent of something like maybe Cave Story or something. As far as that goes, nice. It's definitely all about running and shooting zombies and then picking up the things that they drop down. And and part of that is that there is a you know, there's a trinket collection, you know, imperative, of course, that becomes both your currency for upgrading your weapons, and also as you use ammo and reload your gun, because this game does feature reloading, which is, you know, you may love or hate. It depletes those pick-em-ups. So if you, you know, spend too many lives shooting in vain as you get killed, you end up with less currency to upgrade your weapon with, and that, you know, will make your progress a little stilted. But anyways, yeah, so the story of it is that these three kids and a dog, a lovely pug. I love pugs. They're actually one of my favorite dogs. They're so cute. Do what?
They're very cute.
Yeah, they are. They're a genetic disaster, but that's okay. Aren't we all?
Yeah. Oh, my God, Sam.
Oh, my God, Sam. So, yeah, your three kids and a little dog are you know, special kids who are who have, like, I guess, some kinds of latent powers that are being essentially raised by an AI system that goes rogue and turns people into zombies, apparently. I'm going to say that this game is among the least coherent that I have played in English. I defy you to, like, read the game story and, like, really understand what's going on. But, I mean, that's basically what the gist is. So, yeah, this is a game with some problems. We'll get to those problems in a bit. But basically what you do is you start off with the kid that has the guns, thankfully. Thank God. Would hate to be the kid with nothing who you pick up later. But yeah, you're the kid with the guns and the pug, and so you get to play through the first couple of worlds with this kind of two-player configuration, which kind of introduces you to the systems that this game presents. That is to say, swapping characters. You swap characters immediately on the fly by pressing the A button. Switching between the kid and the dog gives you the ability to, you know, the dog can get into smaller areas but can't directly attack enemies. The kid can directly attack enemies, but here's the other thing, the other tactical advantage of this is that only the character that you control takes damage. The other character is completely invincible. So if you find yourself in a situation where your kid's surrounded by zombies, and by the way, there's almost no iframes in this game, so getting caught really means getting caught. Like, you just take damage constantly. So... yeah, there's a little bit of bounce back, but like two iframes maybe. But yeah, anyway, so switching characters is actually kind of beneficial in this way. Just like all the evil of the world, your computer player characters that you are not controlling are controlled by AI. And indeed, the AI is evil. We will get to that too in just a second. That's going to be under the section problems. But yeah, so you play as the kid and the dog, and you get through the first few stages, first couple of bosses, pretty cool bosses, you know, with, you know, pretty predictable patterns, but, you know, you can find different ways to defeat them. You pick up other guns along the way. You pick up little costumes for your pug. You get a Santa costume for your pug. It makes him jump slightly higher. How that relates to Santa, I don't know, but I don't care. I'm totally fine with Santa Pug, you know, jumping slightly higher than normal. And then, like I said, your kid goes from a pistol to an AK-47 to something else, I don't know. But, so the guns, like I said, are upgradable between stages. You have to move the cursor over to your kid, select him, and then select upgrade on your guns, and that will cost you the little, you know, trinkets that drop in the stages. They get pretty expensive, so you may find yourself replaying levels if you find your firepower is not quite, you know, Republican level. So, after the second boss, you get another kid, and then after another boss, you get the last kid, who is the girl. The girl is very important because she has the one mechanic that you need to get through the rest of the game, which is to say, she can teleport the other characters to her. Why is that useful? Why, it's because at the end of every stage is a portal that you need a key to open and, you know, get through in order to move on with the to the next stage. The problem is all four characters, regardless of circumstance, have to be in the same place in order for you to move on. So you can't just take the one controllable character and get him to the exit. You got to get all the characters to the exit. And that means in the later stages where you've got, you know, twists and turns, and again, your character's controlled by AI, which means they are not going to follow your every move. They are going to kind of do things. Mostly it's that if they kind of miss the jump that you did and they don't end up on the ledge that you're on and you don't, like, just switch to them immediately to get them up on that ledge with you, they may just stand on the ground and jump in place forever until you, you know, get your character to a place where they can't backtrack, and then you can switch over to control the other character and, you know, move them manually without having to worry about your first character coming back and losing all your progress, because enemies respawn at a pretty fast tick. So it's not beneficial to just go through with one character, clear the level, and then come back and like get everybody else through it. Not to mention that the game has lots of hazards, lots and lots of traps, and they really like to stack the challenges. So, you know, just after you learn how to defeat a helicopter that is, like, you know, shooting at you shmup style, and a tank that can kill you in two hits with a, you know, fast missile, like Bullet Bill style, the game will throw both of them at you at the same time, and then you get to figure out how to deal with that. So the game is not short on challenge, and I will say the challenges are legitimate until the problems happen. So the problems largely tend to happen once you have all four of your characters, because the game kind of tends to start breaking apart at that point. There are hints of that, of course. I had this issue where many times, actually, I just had the issue before I started the review, where when you're on the world map and you go into a menu and you go to close out of that menu or choose something, sometimes the cursor will just go to different places that aren't anywhere near the menu that you're using. And you may actually end up calling up a different menu. And so you got two menus and only one of them works. And so you have to close the game and turn it back on, because the menus will just stack. A couple of times I have used the A button just to have it not do anything in the menu. So yeah, the hints of the bugs are there, but once you actually get into the game and get far, and I've corroborated this with the two other reviews I was able to find on YouTube of this game, they said the exact same thing. The game will get so slow at certain points, especially in the late game, with your four characters, the backgrounds, and the enemies moving and whatnot, that it will slow down not only to a crawl, it will completely eradicate certain inputs, such as the jump button. So there are certain points of the game at which, if your game slows down like everybody else's, you may actually not be able to pass it. Other folks better suited for this than I am have found ways through this, but this is not something that should be happening in a completed game that you purchase with money.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's other little complaints here and there for sure, but honestly, I really like the game as far as what it is. I like playing as a kid and his dog. I like switching between the characters and using their unique powers to get through stages. I even like the like kind of unfair challenges, because I mean, when it comes to a side-scrolling shooter, you're kind of expecting that. I like the aesthetics, I like the music. I honestly just think this game needs to bake a little longer. Put it back in the oven, fix some stuff, bring it back out. I'll be happy at that point.
Clocks in at $10. What's your verdict?
Definitely not for $10. I would say wait for this game to get a fix. I will say that there is enough content, and at least in the aesthetics, like, there's enough care. I mean, I will say that, you know, I don't know if it's a meta commentary to say, but not only, you know, in the game story, the enemy is AI, and that's your enemy in the meta, in the sense that you can't, like, get your other player characters to control. Also, again, the way that the story is written and, like, the way it reads actually kind of reads like AI itself.
Jeez.
I'm not the only person to make that observation, though. Like, one of the YouTube videos says that, so, you know, don't have any big YouTubers coming after me about plagiarism. I'm just going to say I also sign off on the sense that it feels like this game was, you know, computer translated at the very least. But, you know, again, the bones of a good game are here. Bones, I mean, dogs, zombies. You know, it's, like I said, it is not without its charm. I like that you're, that Megan, I don't know, your second kid that you get kind of looks like Jeff from Earthbound, so I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I always appreciate a nerdy kid in a zombie thriller. I also appreciate that a kid with like a machine gun is like driving a Jeep around the stages and stuff. And like I said, there's some really cool moments in these games, but yeah, just it needs work. I like this publisher. I bought like games from them before, and I've reviewed a couple too. So it's you know, they do tend to be a little hit or miss on aspects like this, so I don't know if it's going to get fixed, but I hope it does, because I would like to play a complete version of this game.
Cool. All right, well, yeah. We got one final game to talk about tonight. That is a preview of Mech Builder, developed and published by Don Pachi, releasing soon on Steam. Welcome to Mech Builder, a relaxing puzzle game inspired by model building, aka Gunpla. You will experience the relaxing process of building a model kit with complete freedom with over 50 plus puzzles. Who do you think covered this one?
No idea. I who
think covered it. What I want to know is, did Aki see the game covered first? This one. Yeah, well, that's valid. Did Joe see this first, or did Aki see this first?
Someone posted it on the Discord. I forget who. Was it Thimber that posted it on the Discord?
Oh, nice. I think so.
Did Thimber just tag you directly?
Yes.
That's what I was looking for. Yes, I was like, somebody saw this and thought of Aki. That's awesome.
So tell us about this preview. You said it's a fairly short demo build. What's it about? Give us the info.
Okay, so in this game, you play as someone at a desk building some model kits. Not all of them are Gunpla style. They're all tangentially related to it at the very least. Like, one of the kits that you build is a woman. I assume probably a pilot of one of these machines from whatever fantasy universe this is set in. Because these aren't actually Gunpla, because that would cost too much to license.
Yeah.
So these are just similar enough
these
that you're like,
mechs,
oh,
that you build.
Yeah. So in this game, you're playing somebody sitting there at their little hobby table with a nice little table sitting there, and you get to choose which kit you make. In the demo, there's only six, maybe seven of them. I don't remember anymore because it's been a while. And it immediately gives you your runners, which are what all the pieces are attached to. And each kit has a different amount of runners, a different amount of pieces altogether, et cetera, et cetera. They get progressively harder as you continue. None of them are hard if you know what you're doing, because these are simple and I like it. And basically, at that point, you get some options. And you get more options as you continue the game. But for the demo, there's four options you get. Yeah, there's one that's just grabbing pieces and moving them around. Then you can push a button and it brings out your nippers, which are, I think, wire cutters, but for model kits. There you go. It's to cut the plastic pieces out of the runners without damaging them. And obviously, you do that with those. The third option is decals that you can put on, which are basically little stickers that you can put on suits to make them look good. And then the last one is completely repainting the kit altogether, whatever the fuck color you want, which is something a lot of people like to do when they're doing custom stuff. I do not have the skill required to do that because I am blind as a fucking bat. at least in real life. In the game, it's super easy. All of this is super easy. It makes my life so much better.
Does the hobby of building Gunpla translate well to the digital form?
It's a lot more simplistic in the digital form because there's a lot of problems with building kits.
A lot less sticky.
Significantly, actually. You'd be surprised. And less wet, too. And your fingers don't hurt as much. So, God, this sounds so terrible. No. Just ignore everything I just said to make me feel better, because I don't want to make my favorite hobby filthy.
SML After Dark.
No. Oh. So, not all of this equates one-to-one. For instance, when you're cutting out pieces in real life, you have to do a lot of things other than just use nippers to cut them out if you want it to look good. In a video game, you just use nippers and your life is perfectly fine. In real life, if you use nippers right against a piece to cut it out perfectly, it ends up marking up the piece and you may not get all of it off there, which requires sandpaper or X-Acto knife if you're not blind. And that can mar the piece even more if you're using sandpaper. In the game, obviously, you don't have to do this shit. It is, you click it and it is perfect and you don't have to deal with any of that bullshit, which is nice. If only building model kits in real life was that nice. As for things like the decals, the stickers, so on and so forth, much easier, but still very similar to real life. It's much easier because it's fucking huge instead of being like 1 millimeter in size, which is nice. So I can see them and I can do them in the game, unlike in real life, because I'm blind. It's obviously significantly cheaper because the price of this game when it releases is probably going to cost the same amount as a single kit. One of the cheap ones done in real life, so that's great too. There is some oddities with the game, which I don't think they're going to fix. I think this is probably just a thing about resources, and it would take too much time to do. But in this game, a lot of it is you look at the pieces and you just kind of have to figure out how to put the things the fuck together. The last two missions in it, or the last two kits, have manuals. But one of the manuals is just a picture of the finished fucking product, which isn't a manual. It's the cover art to a box. not super useful. And the other one has a manual, but it's like, okay, this is this, like the chest. Here's all the runners you need for it. That's it. That's all the information tells you. It doesn't tell you, oh, you need runner A piece number 3 on it, and it goes here, and it attaches to runner G part 7 here, and then you put those together into runner B 4.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about with any of this, but I just want to put that out there. You're just, it's like a whole new language to me.
Yeah. It's called a special interest, and for people who understand that terminology, you understand.
Then again, I don't know anything about running.
Yeah. I can believe that.
Other stuff we don't know, sadly, is we don't know when this is coming out or how much it's going to cost. So the only question we have to ask is, should we wish list it?
Yes, immediately, please. Yes, I want this to be made, and I want them to have more money so they can make another one that's even more in depth and more like building Gunpla in real life, because I want something that's a one-to-one, so maybe I won't spend all my money buying Gunpla. Because as it stands, this is not going to replace the real-life hobby because it's a little too simplistic for me. But it's still something if I get this for review when it actually comes out, I'll probably 100% this in like a sitting or two.
Shocker.
If I'm lucky.
Shocker.
Yeah. I will never sit here see for 2 days straight. I don't care.
If people are interested, it does have a demo on the Steam store. You could give it a download. The dev is very active in the Steam discussions. I believe they've replied to pretty much every topic that I've seen. So
nice.
Yeah, they're super active.
Give it a download, give it a wish list, and let's keep our eyes on it, because it sounds cool as hell.
And if you're worried about how long the demo is, it'll take you like 30 minutes, an hour absolute max, to go through everything this thing has. So it's a nice, simple, quick thing. So enjoy your time with it.
Yay.
Enjoy.
Yay.
I really liked it. It was fun. Yay.
All right, we are done with this episode. Music. Anyone have any suggestion for music?
Something that has the word banana in it.
I don't know. I seem to remember we had a drummer of a very special band here for the intro, so I feel like
gotta
be a kind of connection there.
Anything from Gimmick or Super High Tops?
Hey,
I don't know how much I have. Like, you have anything new? Anything?
No,
like,
no.
A live recording?
Any songs that have the word banana in it?
I mean, I don't know. We don't have any like real new recordings or anything like not available or anything. It's like I said, Super High Tops mostly exists on YouTube, so
kind of the way a Super High Top song.
Yeah.
Yay. Anyone have any final words to end the show?
Gunpla is good. Gunpla is love. Go buy Gunpla today.
Seconded.
There we go.
You're here.
I knew I liked you for a reason, Brooke.
Go buy Gunpla and don't worry about buying anything else.
There you go.
Yeah, to hell
if
with
you're
food,
buying Gunpla, you don't have money to buy anything
hell
else.
With clothes.
Exactly.
I haven't bought clothes since I was like in high school, so I mean,
yeah, I haven't bought clothes in a long time. Last two articles of clothing actually were my first was the SML shirt and then was Super High Top shirt.
I'm also wearing a super I just said that, yeah.
Yeah.
But thank you so, for your
type
exclamation merch in our chat, and you could check out all the cool merch that we